It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So, Rob, now that we're, you know, a few weeks into 2025, how are your New Year's fitness goals coming along?
What are these fitness goals you speak of, Kate?
Well, my 13-year-old and I resolved to work out together every day, and we haven't stopped yet. My exercise buddy and I are hanging in there.
That's great. If you're not like Kate and have started to slack on your exercise routine or never got started in the first place, that's okay. Our next guest is here to help us take the right mental approach with physical movements that don't require a lot of equipment at all.
Pat Flynn is a Waukesha-based fitness coach and author whose new book is called Strong On, 101 Minimalist Kettlebell Workouts to Blast Fat, Build Muscle, and Boost Flexibility in 20 Minutes or Less. Pat, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Kate, I am so glad to be on your program. Thanks for having me.
You know, we can resistance train with barbells and dumbbells, kettlebells, of course, our own body weight, which is, you know, I'm a fan of doing that piece. Why do you have a passion for kettlebells in particular?
Yeah, great question. So to me, the kettlebell is like the Swiss Army knife of functional fitness. That's how I describe it. If you're just looking for one tool that can do a whole lot of jobs really well, even if it isn't the best tool in the world for any one job, I would say that for most people, most of the time, who want to be fitness generalists, you know, you want to be generally strong, lean, muscular, have great endurance, flexibility, the kettlebell just checks all the boxes. So if you want to be not just a generalist, but a minimalist, it's sort of the ultimate secret weapon.
You mentioned the terms generalist and minimalist. How do kettlebells fit into that equation?
Yes. So I think of generalism as an outcome. And I make an argument in a lot of my different books, but especially in this fitness book, that for most people, most of the time, you should think about being a generalist. And that is focus on being good to great, or at least fairly competent across lots of different skills or abilities. And in fitness specifically, that's where we look at different athletic qualities, things like strength or limit power, adding lean functional muscle, but at the same time, making sure that we're not ignoring other aspects that go into the fitness equation or the health equation, like mobility and flexibility. And those are two distinct things as well. Mobility is sort of the ability just to move with control through healthy range of motion, where flexibility is sometimes just being able to access unusual ranges of motion, we might say, but it's a good skill as well. Endurance, work capacity. A generalist is somebody who cares about all these things, and they take a sort of an all-of-the-above approach to fitness. Everything is a both-and rather than an either-or. So that's what generalism is about, and I think for most people, most of the time, that's kind of what they want. They aren't concerned about being a hyper-specialist, about, you know, winning gold in the Olympics or competing as a high-level powerlifter. They just want to be well-rounded. A minimalist, on the other hand, is somebody who's always trying to find that ideal intersection between effectiveness and efficiency. Effectiveness is just doing the right things, and efficiency is doing things right. People sometimes laugh because when you define minimalism that way, it's so obvious. Like, why would you want to be anything other than a minimalist? When would you want to be ineffective or inefficient? But the point is, it's meant to be a thought exercise to get you to think about, well, what is effective and what is efficient for my goals? Because these things often very much come apart in fitness efforts. When people have certain fitness goals, they don't always do what's effective. Mm-hmm. That might be with respect to exercise selection or different ways of programming exercise. Or even if they're doing certain exercises that might be effective, they might not be efficient because their technique is poor. Or again, certain variables might be off. So it's not an easy thing to actually dial in these various components. But when you approach it as a minimalist, it's something you're always sort of thinking about, asking questions about, getting mentorship, getting some guidance from coaches if you need to make sure that you're trying to, as far as possible, as best as possible, be as effective and efficient as you can at all times.
And that efficiency piece to me is the hardest part. Like, how do I know if I'm working hard enough? Do I have the right weight? Am I doing too many reps or not enough reps? Like that to me, to find that sweet spot, that's really difficult.
It can be, and it'll slide depending on what you're going after. And these are different things you really have to learn on your fitness journey. So for example, if you want to let's just talk about strength and muscle, just to give some examples. If you want to build muscle, there's a few general rules that you should keep in mind when thinking about training with efficiency. you should be somewhere between 6 to 15 reps. It has been demonstrated that you can still gain muscle above 15 reps as well. But the key here, the real secret, is that your intensity needs to be somewhere around within what's called 2 reps of technical failure. So let me explain what that means very quickly. So let's say you're doing a set of 10 mm-hmm. reps on an exercise like a military press. What you want to be sure that you're doing is you're using a weight where you could do no more than 12 reps. So you're within 2 reps of technical failure. And technical failure is where something about your technique starts to break down. You might still be able to get the weight up in an absolute sense, but you can't do it without some sort of technical compromise. Maybe you start leaning back or bending your knees and getting some help from the lower body. That's technical failure. So there is some room to play with respect to how many reps you do, but there's kind of boundaries that you really shouldn't cross. But the key point there for muscle is really intensity, making sure that you're really pushing yourself and you're extremely challenged on those final few reps. They're sometimes called effective reps because it should kind of look like you're fighting for your life on those last few reps, right?
That's right.
But strength is a little bit different. If you just want to get strong, you just want to be able to move more weight, but you don't care about adding as much muscle, then you can drop the reps way down. You could do 5 reps or fewer, even just sets of 2 or 3. But again, intensity is pretty critical. At least on some of those lifts, you want to make sure that you're pretty close to your maximal effort. You don't have to go right to your maximal effort. And for a lot of people, I recommend actually avoiding that. But you want to be, you know, within a rep or two. So you want to be right up to that line if you really want to see serious progress with some degree of efficiency. Mm-hmm.
We are talking with Waukesha-based fitness coach Pat Flynn. New book is called Strong On, as we look at exercise and developing a healthier mind and body in 2025. Pat, you're not just a fitness coach, but you're also a philosopher. How does our mental approach to exercise really help shape our physical health?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. So that's right. My formal background is actually in philosophy. I'm doing the PhD right now. I think there's a lot of important intersections between fitness and philosophy. And one of the areas of philosophy that I focus on is the question of human excellence or flourishing or eudaimonia and the cultivation of virtue. So one of the cool things about exercise and even approaches to eating is they afford real opportunities to develop certain virtues that I think are really good for us. Virtues like fortitude or grit and temperance, the ability to engage in tough and difficult activities because we know that it's really good for us. That's a virtue. That's a power of ours that's worth developing. And also temperance, the ability to resist certain things at certain times because we know that that is also really good for us. And I'm really big, Kate, on the intention behind the gym and the intention behind exercise. As you know, exercise and trying to strive for healthy forms of movement and eating. They're good things in and of themselves, but they don't always have the best motivations behind them. Sometimes people can get into these into the gym with issues of ego comparative disorders and feeling a little bit too low of themselves. And I think it's really, really important when we approach exercise, when we approach diet, to do so from this wider perspective of overall health, particularly mental health, and think about, well, how can this contribute to an overall good life, an overall life of flourishing? I think there's so many opportunities there. Unfortunately, I just don't think that they're talked about quite enough these days.
How important is proper fuel for our minds and bodies and the impact of eating and sleep and those toward reaching our fitness and mental health goals?
Yeah, huge. So important. So like I mentioned before, you know, the generalist is a both and. Sometimes people say, well, what's more important, diet or exercise? And, you know, we could have some fun arguments about which is more important for particular goals. But
some
I think that those
arguments here.
Yeah, some deep technical, you know, distinctions upon distinctions upon distinctions, right? But all of that I think is pretty much a waste of time because I think it's an obvious both and. When you eat healthier, when you avoid foods that are hyper-palatable, I sometimes tell people, just don't eat anything with a mascot, right? That's a good general rule. Or if there's a slogan that says something like, I bet you can't eat just one, it's right. That's true. Just trust them and stay away from it, right? Eat foods that are relatively unprocessed, close to nature. There's lots of good rules for just healthy eating that aren't too complicated. You know, boost your protein numbers. If you can try and, you know, get about a gram of protein per pound of desired body weight per day or somewhere in that general neighborhood, it does a lot for boosting satiety and helps with workout recovery and, you know, helps control cravings and stuff like that. But your question was, you know, how much does this influence the overall outcome? And it's immense, right? When you eat healthy, you tend to have more energy. When you have more energy, you tend to want to go to the gym and you have better workouts. When you have better workouts, you feel better about yourself and you tend to want to eat healthier. So you get into, you get away from the cycle of doom and you get into the cycle of something else, cycle of prosperity, let's call it, right? And when you exercise and eat better, you tend to sleep better. When you sleep better, you feel less stressed, you have more energy. So it all works together in this cohesive package that, to me, it's always, yes, all the above. You don't have to do them all perfectly, but you should always be striving to get quality sleep, eat the best sorts of foods that you can, exercise on a regular basis, because they work together in harmony in a way that's mutually reinforcing. So definitely should not be at odds.
We are at that time of year when plenty of people have set to reach a fitness goal in the new year. They are falling short or perhaps giving up on them already. What kind of advice do you give someone to really help them stick with a goal this time around?
Yeah, great question. It's a big question because the truth is a lot of fitness is not, it's not rocket science. Honestly, a lot of the things that you need to do to get in shape are not particularly complicated. We've talked a lot about them here. The hard part is getting them done, is sticking with it. And so I know we were just making fun of distinctions before, but here's an important distinction that I think is worth talking about. It's the distinction between intrinsic motivation and extrinsic motivation. What people want, and sometimes what they assume they have starting out, is intrinsic motivation. This is just that self-reliance, that self-drive to just do the hard things. You don't need any help. You just get it done. You stick with it. And the truth is very, very few of us have that sort of motivation starting out on something that we have never really done before. This is why we start exercise programs or diet plans and we're excited, but then that motivation fades and we quit. We've all been there. So what needs to happen, and indeed this is actually pretty well researched, is to get to a point of intrinsic motivation, you should start by using extrinsic motivation. And what this essentially means is that you need to find some sort of community, some sort of system that you can plug yourself into that will help to motivate you, hold you accountable, inspire you, and challenge you. So this is having a sort of general fitness environment of people who have similar goals, people that can hold you accountable. And the best thing here, honestly, is to have some sort of coach or mentor. And this was my own fitness journey starting out when I got into fitness in high school. I was not athletic growing up. I had
sitting and resting was what I think you put it.
That's right. My only exercise was sitting and resting for many, many years, right? And I got great coaches, and those coaches inspired me and they held me accountable. And then what happens, Kate, is when people start to see the progress, when the progress sets in over time, it doesn't have to be that long. I mean, for some people, it's just a couple of months. That's when they start to build that intrinsic motivation. They become self-reliant and they can keep going long term. So the point is, starting out, don't try to do it alone. Even though you're super hyped up right now, understand this distinction between the extrinsic motivation and the intrinsic motivation. Find a community, find mentors, find coaches, and plug yourself into those systems.
And we have 101 days with you here if we want to go the kettlebell route. Is it important, though, to switch up your, whether it's a kettlebell routine, or do we always need to be varying our exercises?
Yes, another great and very common question. The way I like to talk about this is in relation to specific goals. So again, it depends on what you're going for. So if you want to get strong at something, then you do want more consistency because you'll get good at what you practice. So if you want to get strong at pull-ups or bench press or military press, you need to do a lot of that. So consistency is the best thing there. And if you're going to have variety there, what you want is sort of specialized variety, just little changes, but the sort of same general movement. So maybe you switch your hand position and pull-ups and stuff like that, right? So that's really important for strength. It's also more important for muscle. So the variety should be less there, and it should be still kind of specific to the big general movements. However, when it comes to conditioning and metabolic conditioning or metabolic resistance training, which is often very useful for facilitating body recomposition and fat loss, that's where more variety can be particularly helpful, because now we actually want to just, we're focusing on pretty much just burning and wasting calories. And the thing with our body is it's very efficient. So once we start doing something for a while, we tend to just, yeah, we become more economical with those efforts, and it's not, the efforts are not as calorically wasteful. So the key there is we actually want to be efficient in reaching the goal. We actually want to be inefficient in the activities that we're doing to burn more calories and to kind of, you know, get stoke the fire, the metabolic fires a little bit. So that's where you can be more intentional about switching things up. Even if you're not doing different exercises, do them in different ways, put them in different sequences, try different rep schemes, stuff like that. So I always like to say more consistency for strength and muscle and more variety for conditioning and metabolic type of efforts.
Pat, thanks for the inspiration. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kate. It's been an absolute joy.
Pat Flynn is a Waukesha-based fitness coach and author whose new book is called Strong On. And he was here to share his kettlebell workout program and wellness tips to help us with our fitness goals. Check out WPR's Instagram and you can see me working on my kettlebell swing with Pat and a couple exercises to get you started with the kettlebell.